went to teach in one of the New York schools, where they were teaching the freshman class, and over and over and over and over again,
like
year
an
after year,
session or something.
And not paid too well either for New York living. And so I decided that it just wasn't worth the money that I would have to have for another quarter. I was a fellow in political science there.
Oh, so you were on some sort of fellowship supporting you during your studies?
Not completely. I don't remember that. I know that I had to pay a good deal for it. Mm-hmm. I can't remember now.
Mm-hmm.
Just how it was. I know I borrowed some money from the church education funds for it.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you were more tied to your own department than to that group of women from the economics department and the social welfare department. You had social contact with them, I gather, at Green Hall.
Yes, we were. When you go there and you're studying on your PhD, you are very much intensively involved in your work, and you have contact with the people in the hall, and you have contact with people in the dining room, and so forth.
What had you thought about a thesis idea before you had given up the idea of getting the degree?
I knew that if you were going on with your doctorate, you'd have. But I really did not have much idea of what I wanted to do as a thesis. I felt that I was quite immersed at that time in Virginia and everything connected with Virginia. My master's thesis had been on county government in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And there had been very little attention paid to county government or local government in the whole of the political science field. It was new. And I wrote an article on that for the National Municipal Review. And it was something that was really new. But it was not the kind of thing that was a large enough study for you to be interested enough to want to go on to write for that with a doctorate. I did that with my master's thesis was on that. So I really was rather vague as to what I wanted to undertake as a doctorate study, and I didn't feel that the Chicago people were too much help because they were so immersed in Chicago, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And to interest them, you'd have to work on something that was more or less connected with Chicago, which wasn't particularly what I was interested in, so that I was a little, I didn't feel that their advices were too helpful along that particular line. They too were specialists. Of course, Dr. Wright was completely a specialist in international relations, and he was a wonderful person. I enjoyed his courses very much, but I wasn't interested in going into the international relations field particularly.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you actually left after the four quarters, having given up the idea of pursuing a degree, and had you already
The university kept my place open.
Mm-hmm.
I had taken a federal examination, and then a little later on, and I was interviewed even while I was at the university, and then a little later on I was offered the position in the Women's Bureau, and I could have stayed at the university, but they already had a person there that was doing the work of a friend of mine who was doing that work, and they had a new director of the Extension Division, and I felt that he should have he shouldn't be handicapped by having people on his staff that he hadn't selected, you see. And I was very interested in going on with something else.
Now, when you took the federal exam, it wasn't with the intention of working at the Bureau? Then?
No, it was a general exam, as I remember it.
And was it for
But I just thought, while I was at the university, I just thought it was good to have that back. In the background, the federal exam, didn't know but what I would stay on. But the university was very much a man's university, and I didn't feel there was much advancement there. Anyway.
Well, when you went back, were you then at the university, were you then teaching in political science, or was it still
basically? I didn't really go back there at all. That year, we had organized, through the League of Women Voters, we had organized the women's committee. Well, what did we call that?
But that wasn't the Women's Joint Congressional Committee, was it?
No, it was. It was composed of legislative chairmen of state organizations. The women's, I can't remember the name of it, but it was composed of legislative chairmen of state organizations who were working for legislation in the state legislature.
Oh, at the state levels?
Yes. Uh-huh. And I had been the executive secretary of that while I was at the university, and had worked, been in Richmond most of the time during legislative sessions, working with that as a part of my university work. And then one of the years that I was in Chicago, someone else had been doing that, and she didn't want to go on with it. So that year, when I was back from Chicago, I took that, was executive secretary of Women's Joint Council of Legislative, Women's Council, I think it was called, of legislative chairman of state organizations. We had 20 state organizations, but we didn't have any local organizations. And we organized it by the committees. We had very liberal and very reactionary organizations in it. We even had the DAR.
The DAR.
And they
and it
there
was
would be
basically
three or four
legislative.
There would be three or four of these three or four of these organizations that would be supporting a certain policy, and they'd make a subcommittee to work for that.
I see.
You see,
and it would basically be to formulate social reform legislation for women, and to lobby for that.
To lobby for social reform. To lobby for legislation of one kind or another.
Was it general legislation, or was it usually relating to women and children?
Didn't relate necessarily to women and children. It related to public welfare. One of the bills was doing away with advertisements on the public highways.
Mm-hmm. So it was social reform legislation.
It was the general types of things. One of the things that we worked especially for was the reorganization of the juvenile court system, the extension of the juvenile court system in Virginia, which the juvenile court judge in Richmond, who always worked with us and we worked with him, was proposing, and he was pushing that, and that was one of the things that several of the organizations were working for. Another thing was for the appointment of a commission for a study of the reorganization of the state government for simplification of the government. Mm-hmm. And there were several different, a whole line of different things. Mm-hmm. That we, and what I did was to follow what was happening in the legislature and prepare a report every so often, about once a week, to send out to these organizations. As executive secretary, I was keeping in touch with what was going on.
Now, but this was executive secretary of all the state groups?
Executive secretary of this Women's Council of Legislative Chairmen of State Organizations, which was composed of...
Of 20 states, you said.
Composed of the legislative chairman of that organization, Federation of Women's Clubs, League of Women Voters,
uh-huh.
And each one had a legislative chairman for its organization. And of course, some were more active than others. Mm-hmm. Some could come to meetings, and some were out in the state somewhere mm-hmm. else and couldn't, and so forth.
And this was a paid position then?
I don't remember whether it was or not. I don't think it was.
Yeah, and so you were doing this while you were doing other work then?
I don't remember about that at all, Natalie. So many years ago. Mm-hmm.
So from the University of Chicago, you went directly to the Women's Bureau, or you did go back to Virginia? I'm not clear about that.
Oh, no, I went on. I went back to Virginia. I was there again for a while. But then this came up that they wanted this done.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I took a little vacation and was at home for a while
mm-hmm.
because I'd been pushing so hard for mm-hmm. so many years. And then it was either while I was in Richmond or while I was at the university this other came up. I had to put off the time of going there in order finished through the legislative session.
So I and what there. Was the actual offer that was made to you from the Bureau then?
Well, then I was offered a position as assistant in the editorial division then. And I was in that work for a year or maybe 2 years. And then they wanted to form a research division. They asked me to head up the research division.
Now, that first year or two was basically assisting in the writing of the reports?
Writing, yes. Well, of course, I did radio writing of reports all through the research period, too.
But in that earlier period,
But that was basically assisting in writing. Not only writing reports, I would be writing a report. If a certain subject would come up, they wanted to report on that. I might be writing a report, but I'd also be going over the reports that others had written and making suggestions and editing. It was an editorial type.
But up until that point, then, all of the earlier research that the Bureau was doing was done
separate by separate.
And there was no
Research decision. A separate decision for this study. A certain person on the staff would do this study. And then the field studies, of course. Sometimes the field person, that would be an outstanding field person, that might write it up, but the people who were qualified for the field work and knew the technicalities and all the field work, which was very difficult and all, were not often were not very good writers, you see. And also, they would be needed for another field study, so that some of the field, most of the field studies were written up somewhere else in the division.
So up until the point that you created the research division, were you designing some of the studies or not? Or were those being done
well,
by
various
individuals?
Well, it was such a short time, I think. Maybe I did. I don't remember, really. It was a rather short time, you see, not more than 2 years.
So the research division was not actually created until 1930 or so?
Was it 1930? Let's see.
For instance,
yeah, that's
excuse
right.
Excuse me, the big study on legislative protective legislation in 1928,
that was a special study for which a special people, I don't know if they brought a person in that wasn't there or whether they took a person from the staff, but it was a special study done by a special person. That was a very important study, of course.
Now, once you created the research division, were you the one who would basically not just design, but also decide what studies should be undertaken, or would Ms. Anderson do that?
Well, no, we would decide those things usually in our meeting of heads of divisions.
Could you run down for me what the divisions were? That would help me.
No, I can't tell you all of them. There weren't so many. There was a statistical division and the research division, and the a division that had to do with publicity, and then later on there was a legal division organized, but it originally was in the research division. But when the minimum wage laws were passed and we were involved in that, the legal work went was expanded and needed more work, and also there were more types of things that the research division needed to do.
So what would happen is these
and then
division
we would have a meeting of the heads of these divisions, you see. Maybe every so often when they wanted to, not at least probably as often as once a month. And and also the field people, when they came in, the field directors would be called in, and we would be there to discuss things with them and for them to tell us about field things and what was needed, and then we knew what our women's organizations were asking for, what subjects were up and what were of importance to be decided. Of course, Mrs. Anderson, I suppose, was the final decisive person, but she would be influenced by what the people suggested, and then the assistant director, of course, she and the assistant director probably would make the final decision.
So it was more that in each of your divisions you would be encountering, or from literature, etc., you would have ideas about research projects. Now, how much of this was influenced by the women's organizations that were still
Well, we had, it was the policy of the Bureau all along to have consultative work with the women's organizations, And if women's organizations ask for some special type of study for us to consider that, and Miss Anderson had a committee of women's organizations, a consultative committee, all through the period. And if there was some special type of study that was different organizations were interested in, she would be very likely to call on women from different organizations to come in and consult with her. So that there was consultation all the time and a desire to consider the things that they thought were pressing, you see. Mm-hmm. And it would be whether they took the initiative or whether we did, sometimes one way and sometimes mm-hmm. the other, but always close cooperation. But we as department heads didn't necessarily have much of that. That was with Miss Anderson herself.
I think and sometimes, she would communicate
sometimes
to you
it would be with a particular division or person that might be more involved with that. And Miss Anderson would call and say, so-and-so's coming in today, will you come in? And then we can talk it over, you see, and discuss what was needed and how it could be mm-hmm. done and so forth.
In the early
so
days
it was a little bit informal.
In the early days of the research division, in the early 30s and through the 30s, what proportion of the projects would you say you initiated directly yourself, and what would have come from these outside requests?
Oh, I don't think I could answer that very well. If we initiated anything, it was because we had a lot of requests for it. Mm-hmm. If we kept getting a lot of letters, we had a lot of letters from all over the country all the time, mm-hmm. you know, we had to answer. And they were sent to different divisions. We had some in research, and then there would be some sent to the publicity division, and depending on what type of thing mm-hmm. it had to do with. And if we found that there was a great pressure, desire for information on a certain subject, and perhaps we felt that we didn't have enough information at our fingertips to answer that as fully as we thought it should be answered, we might suggest, or Miss Anderson would also, who was a very perceptive person, would get it from talking with different people who would come to talk with her, mm-hmm. or perhaps from some suggestions that might be made in conferences that she'd have with higher-ups in the department mm-hmm. or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. It was all sort of develop, maybe informally.
One of the things that has struck me, and I guess other people too, about the Bureau, and especially in those very early days, was the kind of commitment there was to women and women's issues.
Oh, yes.
You yourself came out of a suffrage
background. Oh, yes.
To what extent do you think that there was, that the women who worked in the Bureau in those early days would have identified themselves as feminists, or even if they wouldn't use the word, that were very strong advocates of women?
Oh, I would think they would be.
Do you think they would have referred or thought of themselves as feminists? Did you?
Well, I suppose of course, I always had that flair. In fact, I was the president of the little equal suffrage league we had in college, mm-hmm. when I was in college. And I remember two different years, I had meetings in which I invited Florence Allen, mm-hmm. who was then studying law in New York and was later on the Supreme Court in Ohio. And I really was very, very thrilled with her. She was a marvelous person. And I had her to come and speak in 2 different years while I was the president of the Equal Suffrage League there.
So you would have identified yourself in those days, certainly, as a feminist.
Oh, yes.
Did the other...
Well, I wouldn't have worked on it because I was too busy with the work I was doing.
Yeah, but which, of course, was women's work. Though.
Well, it was, of course, and it was labor work, too.
Right. Would the other women have identified themselves, do you think, as...
Well, we
as
had quite a number of women in the Bureau, as it turned out, from time to time, who had been active workers in the YWCA, and of course that was very much oriented toward women's needs. Mm-hmm. So we did have several women on our staff who had been YWCA workers.
To what extent did you openly see yourselves as advocates for women in the kind of work you were doing?
Well, of course, we were working for women. That's what we were doing.
Because I have the sense, though, that very often, that one of my interests in the Bureau is that all through the period after suffrage, it seems to be one of the few highly visible, cohesive organizations throughout the 20s and 30s that also involved the interests of working women, that really represented women's interests. And it seems that so much of the research was motivated by clear advocacy positions to change women's situation. And I wonder the extent to which you were basically able to openly be advocates for women, and the extent to which it had to be viewed only as objective research.
Well, I think we were openly advocates of good conditions for the work of women. Mm-hmm. That was our function.
Mm-hmm.
And that would tie in with it, certainly.
Because,
of course, we some of our people belonged to the Business and Professional Women's Club, and some of them belonged to the League of Women Voters. And when we were at that stage in the government, it was definitely prohibited for any government employee to go into political work, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So you were blocked off right there from the political angle.
Mm-hmm.
Could not do that. Could not do active political work. Mm-hmm. They're trying to do away with that now.
But
now you've got two question sides on that. Of course, if you're doing political work, maybe you're influencing
mm-hmm.
policy and so forth. And so there are two sides to that, and yet it's very handicapping here. All these people who live in Virginia or
yeah.
Maryland and all of that, and they shouldn't be barred from political work, working in political parties.
But there was a tremendous overlap of in various women's organizations that you all belonged to then?
People belonged to the different women's organizations, were active in them.
And was it basically, did many of the women seem to come out of the social reform movements of the progressive era and that earlier
period? We had often had young women who were very enthusiastic about as applicants for employment, very enthusiastic about women's movements and social work and
mm-hmm.
that type of thing,
mm-hmm.
who applied for jobs. And of course we considered, our consideration was the capability of the person
mm-hmm.
for what they, for the job. Were they a capable research worker
mm-hmm.
and not biased by this or by that? And yet of course the whole background of the outlook was for women.
Right.
And for the benefit of women, for opening opportunities for women, and for seeing to it that women had suitable conditions of work,
well,
of employment and of wages and so forth.
What would happen, for instance, if in an early study women didn't show up too well? Would this be pursued and be made into a bulletin, or would it be kept somewhat undercover?
We weren't studying the efficiency of women at all.
Well, for instance, Ethel told me about a study on absenteeism.
On what?
On absenteeism among women, where the women really didn't show up too well. And what was done in that case mm-hmm. is, it was a pilot, is it wasn't pursued, because
in fact
you were advocates.
Oh, I see.
And so that there really was...
I don't remember that one. Yeah, that's a
good... But you don't remember other incidents?
Yeah, that's a good influence.
Uh-huh.
That's a good... No, I don't think I do. Because I don't think we often studied that particular type of thing. We did study the capability of women for certain types of jobs,
mm-hmm.
and there were certain types of jobs that women were particularly suited to, and we would advocate that sort
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Mm.
But we were not studying jobs to push women into mining or this
mm-hmm.
and that, you
mm-hmm.
see. Particularly, we were not focusing. That wasn't our major focus at all, really.
Can you describe for me the way the Research Bureau functioned? Say, an idea, I gather that an idea would emerge either from this meeting and Miss Anderson would approve it. And then how would it be, what would be the next stage?
Well,
of
then
that?
It would be the responsibility of the person to undertake it that was going to do it, and they'd begin and make an outline, and just as you would with any study, you see.
Oh, you wouldn't do that? That would
yes,
be given,
I would do it.
You would do it?
If it was a research study, I would do it.
So
or
you,
one of my staff would do it.
But you basically were in charge of all the research studies.
Oh,
then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we had a series of studies of particular occupations and particular hazards to women in certain types of occupations. Mm-hmm. And I had one person on my staff, devoted in the way to the health of women or the welfare of women, and I had one person on my staff that was studying along those lines, and we would have a series of bulletins on that over a period of years, and she would be working on it, or she would, another thing that she would do would be to study the state reports on accidents, and they weren't always divided by sex, so we had a limited number of states, and for a certain year she'd study that and see the extent of accidents to women, and what types of accidents and that sort of thing. And then maybe 2 years hence she'd do another similar study and see if there was any improvement and what types of industries there were in where the accidents were and that sort of thing.
Now, on something like that, that discussion, that what you just talked about raised a question in my mind, and that is, to what extent was there a liaison then with women's groups that would promote certain kinds of legislation and could use the sort of data? I mean, there was a relationship to the Women's Trade Union League.
Yes.
Was there that relationship to other women's groups
where
their data could be used by them for legislative work?
Oh, yes. I don't know that I can cite details at the moment. There was a very loyal support of the Bureau by all women's organizations. And the Bureau, of course, had a relatively small appropriation within the whole. And if there was any likelihood or desire to increase the appropriation, and maybe in view of the study of a certain type of thing, the women's organizations would all come right up and back it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or at least certain ones particularly more than others, I suppose. But you see, we didn't personally have too much contact with that part of it because that was an administrative type of thing at the top.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And we didn't always necessarily know the ins and outs of it as it was going on. Mm-hmm. Our job was to dig in to find the information that they needed and to develop it and present it and so forth.
Now, in developing the research project, how many people were there in the research division in the early
30s?
Well,
we had a very small staff. I think I only had two people beside the secretary and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we never had a big staff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sometimes had, sometimes some of the field people would come in to do a study with us when they were not working on a field project, which wasn't too good an arrangement because the people who got the information in the field usually were not particularly good at putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty much of a problem for me sometimes to try and work these girls in.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have about three very good research people. I had this one, for example, who was doing the work right along on the accidents and on the hazards and that type of thing. And she was with me all the time. And then, in the beginning, the legal person was there, but she had been there for a long time and was very familiar with women's laws. And it was the logical place to have her in the research division, but I didn't assume to supervise her particularly because she knew her job thoroughly. And then later on, that legal division was put into the minimum wage division because it tied in better there, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had this person that I was talking about who was concentrating a good deal of the time on the occupational development of women and that sort of thing. Then later on we had another person who was developing occupations from a different point of view, and she went on to develop opportunities for women in certain occupations, like opportunities in medical occupations and opportunities in other types of occupations, which was a long series of types of work, you see. So we would often be likely to have a person that was specializing in a certain general field under the research.
I see. Now, then you would do the overall design of the research, and then you would give instructions to the field workers who, were they the basic data collectors?
The field workers were absolutely on their own. They gave instructions to us. about that. More on the field studies. We didn't do research only on the field studies. For example, one of my bulletins was on the problems of women workers who had a double job and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. You see. And we made up the questionnaires for that and made the whole plan of that study, and I wrote it.
And then who would actually use the questionnaire and gather the information? That would not be the field workers. There'd be people from the research division itself then who would do that?
How did we distribute those? I don't remember. How we distributed that one. But another bulletin, which I prepared, was called Women in the United States, and it rose in this way. This request came in this way: the International Labor Organization, Women's Division, asked for, from the different countries, a report on the economics, and the State Department referred it to us, mm-hmm. and then we consulted with the Women's Bureau, with the different women's organizations, thinking that some women's organization would undertake that study, and they all, 10 of the women's organizations, they all asked us to do the study. So I completely did that study, planned it, and made the study complete.
And then what was your data source?
It was very, very fragmentary in many cases, because we got the information there was some census information, and there was information from state departments of labor, many of which, only a few of which, divided their information by sex, and from any place where we could get information from, you see, to put into this development of this economic situation. And it was the first time there'd been an effort to bring together all the information that we could find available, mm-hmm. by scrounging and pushing and hunting, that would indicate the overall economic situation of women. Of course, that bulletin would become out of date mm-hmm. before too long, but it was a major pioneer study. Mm-hmm. And another thing that was very pleasing to us about that bulletin was, by the time that bulletin was being done, most of our bulletins came out, and they were just very much the same, you know. And we were able to get a very pretty picture background put on the cover of that bulletin, and then gradually we were able to get some charts and illustrations mm-hmm. in bulletins, you see, which at first we couldn't do.
Let me clarify some for my own clarification.
So that bulletin was a landmark, one of the mm-hmm. landmark bulletins.
I gather that there were the studies that were designed by you in the research section that would draw on census data and where you would gather the information directly, and that there were all the other studies that involved any field work were actually designed by someone else too.
Oh, that would be the field staff particularly. They were entirely in charge of the designing and planning of their work, but we sometimes had to write it up afterward.
And but the research division wouldn't actually ever design a study and then give it to the field division to go out and conduct.
We were separate divisions entirely.
I see.
And then the field division, when they brought their material in, that had to go to the statistical division to be organized, and before it came to us to write.
Then the research division would write it and issue the bulletin.
We would write it and issue the bulletin.
So is
of
is,
course we'd consult with them all yeah. the time about details and everything.
Because it now clarifies something for me, I think, that there'd be some bulletins with your name on it and others that weren't.
Well, of course, the policy in the government was not to put on names, and I was surprised to look back and find that some of the bulletins of mine definitely had my name on them. But Miss Anderson, from the very beginning, had the policy of putting the name in the letter of transmittal.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how you found out about that.
Now, was it the ones that your name would go on would be the ones that were actually initiated by the research division, in other words, most likely?
Yes, I guess so.
Now,
I haven't looked at that. I don't have them, of course, now.
Who was the director, whatever the title would be, of the field division?
Well, each person who went out with a field group was their own director. Now, Miss Erickson was a director. She was a field director.
But there was no
and
one.
And then Mrs. Best was a field director. Ms. Manning was a field director. They were absolutely in charge of that work and of the people that were working with them.
And
they were the directors.
And
so
they
so
would
we'd
come,
have,
they might
we'd
come,
have two
come
or three,
perhaps.
We'd have
the idea
of two.
A study. And
yes.
Now,
well,
in something like the study on the
well,
post-war...
Well, they'd often find... they'd talk it over with Miss Anderson and suggest and then she'd approve it.
Mm-hmm. And how did you feel, as a research person, how did you feel about that kind of division?
Oh, that was fine. Mm-hmm. Because they were specialists in that work, and they were wonderful.
Well, do you feel they were always able to actually design the study well, though?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you never felt the need in any of the research projects you were designing to then have field workers to gather some of the data? You always were able to get the data through official documents and
well,
that sort of thing?
Of course, we did have questionnaire studies, but the field people weren't involved in those either.
Well,
sometimes we would consult with field people about the situations or that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
in certain places maybe.
For
or
instance,
certain
on
industries.
That big...
But they knew the industries, you see, and they went into the factories,
mm-hmm.
and they knew the localities, and they were very knowledgeable people from that angle.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we didn't feel that our angle was wholly bookish either.
Mm-hmm.
We had a practical application for much of the material that we did. But of course the field, well, there were cases in which the field people did make the study for us. Now in that study of women, working women's responsibilities, I guess we made the questionnaire. The field people may have gotten some of that information for us. I don't know.
Well, for instance, in that large, that gigantic study of post-war plans of working women in 1944, was that a project of the research division?
What?
That study of post-war plans of women in 10 industrial areas that was done in 1944?
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, so it was interviews with 13,000 women in 10 production areas. On their plans after the war in terms of employment.
I don't remember that one at all.
Oh, well, maybe that was done totally by the fieldwork people then.
What was the name of the bulletin?
I think the name of the bulletin is Post-War Production, or Post-War Employment of Women in 10 Industrial Areas, something like that.
Did you ask Miss Erickson about that?
Yesterday, did we talk about that?
She has such an excellent memory about everything. She's a remarkable person.
Well, it's interesting to me, that structure. It never occurred to me that I would have, and I did assume, I guess. And I was surprised when she told me that the field workers would make up their own schedules,
mm-hmm.
for interviews. And that seemed peculiar, but I wasn't clear of the extent to which there was
that
separation.
Well, they would sometimes discuss it with the
statistical
division,
she said.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I wasn't as clear in talking to her that there was this division, a separation where the research division would design one set of studies that
yes.
they would actually carry through
all
the way.
Well, you see,
they
had to have so many studies with such a small staff. And then later, of course, I don't know at what time Miss Mary Hilton came in, but then we had a reorganization in which she headed up the whole of research, and she had the statistical division and the research division under her general.
I see.
But she depended on us really to do the work,
mm-hmm.
you see.
Now, in these research, in the research section on the research designs that you would do, was most of the focus then on interpretation and analysis of census material and other material that was already in existence, rather
well,
than the gathering of new data?
No, we gathered new data too.
And would you hire on special people to do that, since you had such a small staff?
I think the field people did that for us, but we made the schedules for those types of things.
I see. And that wasn't too often, I gather, from what you're saying.
Well, over the series of years, it just depends.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for example, there was another, which I'd considered quite a pioneer study, and this was done from documents. And that was... It had a funny name, which wasn't a suitable name for it at all, because, you know, in those government agencies where you discuss things, you don't always get... It was called Documents on International Service of Women or something like that. And what it actually was a complete study of the International Labor Organization and women's work in that, and all of the women who had represented their countries in that, or in that, and the commissions that they served on, mm-hmm. through the whole history of the ILO, and then the first year of the League of Nations, the work that women had done throughout, and also if they had proposed any propositions, which of course were few in the League. But that was really a very historic document, and one that wouldn't go out of date, like this Women in the United States would. But after a certain length of time, if the bulletins had piled up in the printing office, there's a demand to do away with them, you see. And at that time, we had a change in administration, and the person who was at the head of the bureau didn't know very much about anything. And she was a nice woman. And
was that when it began as a political appointment, basically?
Yeah.
Because earlier they were really not political appointments.
And she wanted to be fair. She didn't want to be too political. But she had agreed to the destruction of a whole bunch of bulletins beyond a certain date, before a certain date, you see. Without any, the rest of us on staff didn't know anything about it till after it was done.
Now, what year was that?
So practically all those bulletins were destroyed. And the only way you could get them now would be in libraries.
Yeah.
Or in the archives.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder if that's why I have had so much difficulty finding other records from the Bureau in the period up until practically into the 40s with the World War II materials. That early stuff from 1927, 1928, it's almost impossible to put your fingers on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gone.
Now, what year was that?
Well, the archives would be the only place.
Well, this was in the archives.
Supposedly everything went to the archives, that is, everything published.
Yeah, the published stuff is there. It was the papers and things and the field notes that I was looking for.
Well, I don't know how much the archives would keep those.
Because they have it for the later period, but not for the earlier one.
Well, they probably didn't go to the archives in the earlier period.
Oh, because I
And they probably were not thought too important in the Bureau itself, very likely. Let's see. We better be going to lunch.
Okay. Maybe afterwards, there are a couple more questions that maybe I can ask you.